Love where you live. We are Radio Newark.
Hey, Kevin Guthrie here, talking all things mental health and well-being. We have a guest in the studio. We have the lovely Nick Davis. Welcome, Nick.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, as always, we're going to start with the listener question. So, the listener question this week was, how do I support my wife through the menopause? Now, I'm not even going to try and answer that one, but I am going to pass straight on to Nick. Nick, how do you think a man could offer support to his wife if he feels she's going through menopause, or if she is indeed going through menopause?
So I think there's lots of different ways. I think the first thing to say about the menopause, from my experience going through it myself, and also the interaction I have with lots of discussions and other women, is it's very, very individual.
Yep.
So my answer is my answer, and yep, I hope it can help somebody.
I'm sure it can.
But it is an individual thing. So my husband is particularly supportive, and one of the big things is he absolutely recognises that it is a real thing.
Yeah.
And that this isn't me just being in a bad mood or having a bad day, and that hormones aren't a joke.
Yeah.
And I've been as guilty as that as anybody of, you know, taking the mickey out of myself and saying, you know, I'm a hormonal woman, be careful today. But the menopause brings a whole new meaning to that word.
Yeah.
And very often on the bad days, and when I say bad days, they may be exhaustion, anxiety that I just don't understand, irritability, you know, I'm falling out with myself.
Yeah.
There's a sadness. I can't explain it. There's a sadness that I often feel with it, which very often comes with the anxiety and the tiredness. And he's just there. So he's there, and he will take over. You know, we have three children, so it's quite difficult to have a day where you really don't have anything to do.
Yeah.
And on those days where you just really can't face getting out of bed and you just want to sleep and you just need to simplify things and take things out of your mind and take a step back, he's there in as much as he can physically be. And, you know, he holds me and he tells me it's going to be okay, and he just takes control. You know, he's like, right, I'm going to get on with the dinner, I'm going to sort the kids, I'm going to bring you a cup of tea, have a sleep, meditate, go for a walk. You know, he knows my routine of stuff.
Yeah.
He knows makes me feel better.
You know, self-care.
My self-care, go for a swim. And I think that's a really important thing for women, is that we talk about self-care. People think, you know, it's a bit indulgent. And do we mean that that's a day at the spa? Well, it might mean it's a day at the spa. I don't know what it means for you.
Yeah.
But it means it's something that really just quietens the mind.
Yeah.
And gives you some serenity, I guess, and stillness back. So in terms of how my husband supports me, it's one is he really recognises how real it is, and he really appreciates and understands how it feels in
yeah.
as much as he can. And what he tries to do is create space for me
yeah.
to be able to just deal with it,
yeah.
whether that's rest, whether that's taking some time out, whether it's just... Yeah, one of the great things he does do, actually, I often joke that, you know, I've got the feeling mind and he's got the thinking mind. There's a lot of research on, you know, the fact that if anybody reads Mark Manson, he's one of my favourite authors, and he talks about a feeling mind and a thinking mind.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the feeling mind is effectively the driver of the car and the thinking mind is the navigator.
Yeah.
And one of the really good ways it works between us is when the anxiety comes, I get a lot of paranoia and neurotic, and I get things out of perspective.
Yeah.
And I lose a lot of my cognitive ability to make decisions I would normally yeah. just make without a second thought.
Yeah.
And he's a really good filter for me.
Yeah.
And he's so patient with it. So I might, you know, it is exhausting when somebody asks you the same very trivial question 10 times over.
Yeah.
Do you think this ham's okay for the kids? Does it smell okay? Am I going to poison them? I mean, this is the level. This is the level of conversation I may be having, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, there have been many 6 a.m. calls to my sister, who's a cook, where I've been, can I do this with food? Can I do this? What do you think about this? These are things I know the answers to.
Yeah.
But the menopause is, it's a very, very complex beast.
Yeah.
And that's his patience and his being there and his making space and he's just recognizing how real it is.
Yeah. That sounds perfect. You tapped into self-care then. And I wanted to kind of tap into that a little bit further. So I've talked about in therapy, I refer to it as oxygen. There's a little exercise I do, and it's called What's My Oxygen? What's Your Oxygen? And What's Your Oxygen comes from those moments when, you know, when you're on an aeroplane and they say, if the oxygen mask falls, please take your own oxygen first. And if I'm working with a client, I'll say, why do they say that? And they'll say, and they'll either get the answer, and the answer is, if we don't take our own oxygen first, we are no good for anybody else, or we'll pass out, so we can't pass the oxygen to somebody else. And it's exactly the same in life. If we don't care for ourselves, if we don't do our own self-care, then we're no good to anybody else. We can't be there for everybody else. We can't be the best possible version of us that we are. So I sometimes refer to it as oxygen. And, you know, sometimes people don't even know what their oxygen is. I'll give people this exercise and I'll go, what is your oxygen? They go, I have no idea. And they're that far down the line that they literally don't know what it is. And it could be anything from a dog walk to going to the gym to having a swim to, like you say, meditating, having a coffee and cake with friends. Anything for me, I used to call it feed my soul. Because for me, it was kind of, whenever I deliver it to someone, I always touch my chest. I say, what gets you here? What makes you feel here? What is it? Is it being outside? Is it walking the dogs? Is it, could be a spa day. But for me, it's way simpler than that. It's the little things that we do, like having coffee and cake somewhere, having a drive out, just going somewhere nice and sitting quietly and having a nice cup of coffee or tea and a little bit of cake.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of the difficulty is that, again, I certainly found when you have an incredibly busy life and you're juggling lots of balls,
yeah,
you don't know what your oxygen is, and actually you feel guilty. And I remember, you know, feeling guilty and a bit self-absorbed,
yeah,
by even trying to find that.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely the simplicity is where you do find it. And I think the simpler it is,
yeah,
the more effective it is. And everybody has to experiment, because I think sometimes, particularly with a lot of the self-help sector that is growing, yeah, enormously as awareness, and I would refer to it as an epidemic, a mental health epidemic.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, I do include menopause when I talk about my journey. I include menopause, yeah, within there because of how it makes me feel. Sometimes there's an expectation that there's some epiphany moment, or if you read something or you see something or if somebody says something, yeah, then that must be it. And it's not like that.
No.
It's so individual. It's something that you find over time. And, you know, I'm a great believer in, you know, if you jump and it's the right thing to do, the universe will catch you. And I'm,
yeah,
you know, I am quite spiritual like that. And all of the things where I found my oxygen have been found, you could say, by coincidence.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I believe in coincidences.
No.
I think it's, you know, they say that when you look at people, the people who, they did this big survey on, I digress a little bit, on whether people are lucky or not.
Yeah.
And it's not that people are lucky, it's that some people have their eyes open.
Yeah.
And some people really see things.
Or they're ready to receive.
Or they're, exactly, yeah, exactly. And things where I found my oxygen, I didn't even know I was looking for it.
Yeah.
And it was something, my kids swam at the swimming club, and I'm sat on the sidelines and I'm thinking, why am I sitting here? I may as well get in the pool and swim, because I used to swim.
Yeah.
And they do a veterans, a masters,
yeah, thing.
So I did. And then I started swimming at lunchtimes in the week. And that's where I found,
yeah,
some beautiful connections, talking at the end of a lane with people,
yeah,
who I ended up having some incredibly deep and really touching conversations with, and made an enormous amount of difference to me.
Yeah.
It's taking the dogs out for a walk, you know, and it's cold and it's raining and it's miserable. But, you know, I'll bump into people. I don't even know their names.
Yeah.
But I have a conversation with them and they smile and they ask me. Do you know what they ask me? They ask me how I am. They don't ask me who I am and they don't ask me what I do. They ask me how I am.
Yeah.
And they genuinely mean it. And
yeah,
they stop and they have the time. And they, you know, they're not rushing past me in a corridor on the way to the next meeting.
Yeah.
And they see me and they hear me. And it's those simple things, and again, it was, you know, serendipity or whatever. After I lost my dad, I'd been introduced to a lady who did some wonderful meditation, And I could never still my mind, you know. I was like, oh, I'm really rubbish at this. So
it's really difficult.
Yeah, and I still find it really difficult now. Although the kids laugh at me and they say, is it really meditation, Mum, or are you having a nap? And I go, well, you know, if you need to go deep, you need to go deep. And I went to her because I thought, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this on my own. And she was just, you know, a particular soul I needed to meet at that point in time who really helped me.
Yeah.
And she did actually really help me learn how to be more patient.
Yeah.
And stop expecting this epiphany or this big bang, because yeah. that's not how it is. And I think some of it is maybe we've lost patience. You know, we live in a very fast-moving society. There is so much distraction. We are the most technologically connected, and yet I would say the most humanely disconnected
yeah.
in a lot of ways. I don't know if you've read I would recommend this to anybody, Yohan Hari, Lost Connections.
Right.
I would say it's definitely, there's so many books, but there's, you know, the odd book in your life that really has a transformational moment.
Yeah.
And he talks about lost connections and the real loss of human connection. It's that simplicity. Like Friday, I try not to work on a Friday. Do you know why? Because I just really love going to a market and buying the local fruit and veg.
Nice.
And actually having a conversation. And you know what? They know my name.
Yeah.
And they say, hi, Nick, how are you this
yeah.
morning? And I say, hi, how are you? You know, what have we got? Which are the best apples this morning? Oh, and it
human connection.
Human connection. And it's human connection doesn't have to be some big, you know, soulful transformation.
No.
It happens. It's living an ordinary life in an extraordinary way. It's going back yeah. to that simplicity of just saying, hello, how are you? Seeing people. You know, I love it. You know, we live in a village and I love the doctor's surgery because you can end up having a tea morning in there, you know, and you chat to people. And I really noticed, and this book, Lost Connections, has lots of different, really deeply researched and incredibly well-written ideas in there about this connection that we need with each other and how loneliness
yeah.
is really killing us.
You know, we are biologically wired for human connection.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're wired for. And I think, what's happened with that? Another tangent. So another...
No, do it.
Another role model, James Victoire, he's written a book, Perfunction, if I've said that correctly. And he's great. He's fantastic. He's just got some really, really raw and meaningful, profound messages. And he talks about the lone wolf and a little bit like Brené Brown, the belonging. You know,
yeah.
we are pack animals.
Yep.
We do need connection. But I think... Where I found it went wrong for me is when you're in the wrong pack.
Yeah.
And what you do is you compromise. And I didn't even know I was compromising myself because I didn't even know what my values or priorities were anymore. I just knew that I didn't feel very happy a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I used to beat myself up for that because I was like, look at you, you're so spoiled. You have all of this, you have this job, you have that. What have you got to moan about?
Yeah.
Like, why am I, but my soul wasn't being fed.
No.
My wallet was being fed. My brain was being stimulated, yeah. probably overstimulated, but I was constantly shaving off bits of me or trying to change a different shape.
To fit in.
And he talks about the lone wolf and, you know, wolves are a pack and, you know, it's very hierarchical and there's, you know, a lot of rules and regulations. And the commonly held belief is that if the wolf leaves the pack or is driven out of the pack, they'll basically go off into the woods to die because they're a pack animal. But what he's saying is that's not true. What about the wolf that goes off into the woods to set up his own pack?
Yeah.
What about that?
Yeah.
And that's when we talk about belonging and connection.
Yeah.
It's about being in that pack where you're not judged and you are completely embraced. And one of the things I love about Mark Manson is what he says, embracing you, it's not about showing your best self.
No.
In actual fact, the most important thing when somebody loves you is that they see the really bad bits.
The authentic part of you.
Yeah, and they see the bits that aren't so great, because
we're
all humans, and they love you
all
unconditionally.
Sides.
They love all of that.
Yeah.
So if you want to test it out, show them the bad bits. And if they're still there afterwards, you know, love that thing where you shake your world until only the truth remains.
Yeah.
And then let's see who's still stood in the world with you.
Because they're the real people.
Yeah, then you've got connection.
I was working with somebody the other day, and we did something similar. And I referred to it as a table. I says, you know, when people arrive at a table and they bring something to the table, I says, and then other people arrive at the table, they don't bring something to the table, but they too take from the table. And I said to this client, it says, try and use that metaphor and look at the people around you and ask yourself, what are they bringing to this table, to our table, because it's an our table, and ask yourself, what are they bringing, or are they just taking from the table, from food that I'm providing? I says, because for me, it's about a balance of we give and take and we give and take. I says, and if they're not bringing anything, then maybe question why they're in your world. Because, you know, sometimes people end up in our worlds for all sorts of odd reasons. So sometimes it can be family. It can be that family connection there. But I have a particular belief on family that it doesn't fit in with social construct that we are meant to stay together in family forever. I kind of come from an ilk of we are pack animals, and sometimes those packs move a little bit. And just because we are born into a pack doesn't mean that's where we're supposed to stay. That's a personal belief of mine. But yeah, I use this metaphor with this client. So sometimes people are very visual in the way they think. So, but we do end up in circles that we go, why am I here? What am I getting from this circle? What am I giving to this circle? And what am I taking back?
And, you know, it all comes, you know, I talk a lot about just getting back to first principles, which is effectively just getting back to the truth. And very often, again, I don't think you have an epiphany moment where you get up one day and learn your truth. I still don't know all of mine, but, you know, the ego gets in the way a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I definitely know I've been attracted to things.
Yeah.
Because it's my ego that's actually been attracted. And if I'm really honest.
Yeah.
And I always pay the price for it.
Yeah.
I always pay the price for it because at some point within me, it will compromise me in some way.
Yeah.
And the person who will suffer and feel bad
is you.
Is me.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. Again, talk about synchronicity. The post, I write because it soothes my soul, if I'm honest. And that's why I vlog. It's self-therapy. It soothes my soul. And if, you know, just showing up and owning up and maybe, you know, my sour lemons aren't any more or less sour than anybody else's. I think comparison is a thief of a lot of things. I think whatever your sour lemons are very valid to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if somebody could use them to make some lemonade, I would really like them to do that.
Yeah.
And that's why I share. And the post I did this morning was very much on, there's a real fine line between, I bang on a lot about being yourself and about not being afraid to be yourself.
Yeah.
And not ever being ashamed or afraid of you or giving your voice up.
Yeah.
And to be really strong in that.
Yeah.
And to not compare to others. But there's a fine line between that and being consumed by yourself. And to me, the difference is that being yourself is really about giving, because you're giving everybody else a gift.
Yeah.
You're giving them all of you.
Mm-hmm.
You're setting realistic expectations.
Yeah.
You're allowing people to love you unconditionally, because they, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
There isn't some, you know, mirage here. And also, if we're really honest, and Johan Hari, I love this, what he says is, it's not, you know, you will get through this. It is, we will get through this.
Yeah.
And that's the whole connection thing. And I think part of genuinely being yourself is that it allows you to really connect properly with people.
Yeah.
To really have deep and meaningful relationships. Whereas if it is all about yourself, it's a little bit like your table analogy.
Yeah.
What you spend your time doing isn't sharing what you've got. It's showing what you've got and then taking what other people have too.
Yeah.
And eventually yourself will catch up with yourself. You know that definition of hell? Hell is on your last day on earth when you turn around and you bump into who you could have been.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And that keeps every single day of my life.
Yeah.
That is the first thing I say to myself.
Yeah.
And it came to me a few years ago. I was driving in the car and I thought, if I don't do something.
Yeah.
That is my legacy. If I don't do something, I am going to be somebody who could have and didn't.
Yeah. And just not true to yourself. I mean, we're talking over and over there again about authenticity. It's been something in my life that I've been chasing now for, it feels like years, but more acutely over the past 5 or 6 years. And it is, for me now, it is about authenticity. And a little bit like what you said earlier about if people don't like who I am. People don't like who I am as a therapist or as a friend or as a partner. Then it has to be up to them, but I have to be more true to myself. Within that, there's a caveat that I will always be respectful to people. I will always be polite and kind as I can, but I will always be true. I always remember a friend saying to me, I had a partner in the past who was very, very honest, to a fault, very, very honest. And I was talking to a friend, and this friend went, well, you know, it's just an... What did he say? It's an excuse. For me, it's just an excuse to be rude. And I went, no, I disagree. I disagree with that. That is not an excuse to be rude. That's somebody that wants to be honest, that is just speaking the truth. We're not very good at hearing the truth or speaking the truth. So when we do hear it, it can feel a little bit, jarring. I was thinking about an incident on Saturday night where I was very honest and in front of a group of people and they didn't like it. But I'm not going to go into that.
It is interesting because I think, you know, we spend our lives trying to avoid a lot of uncomfortable truth.
Yeah.
And by the avoidance, what we do is we build a bigger and bigger and bigger thing that will eventually explode on us.
Yeah.
And it's the avoidance of suffering and it's the avoidance of the uncomfortable truth. And the biggest one of all, of course, is death.
Yeah.
So a lot, and one of the truest sayings I heard, I mean, I'm learning every day. I mean, I still get asked that question, what do you do? And do you know what? I have no idea. So I just say, I'm a student of life because honestly, and even that sounds a bit kind of, I'm not even sure that sounds authentic enough, but honestly, I just stand there and go, that is such an enormous question. I really don't have any idea. Can I just not answer it? Because I'll be here for the next 2 hours. But people can only be as open with you as they are with themselves.
Yes.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of this having to sit with the uncomfortable truth and the discomfort. So if I respond in a certain way to somebody or somebody, I feel a certain way because of an interaction or something that's said, you know, inevitably it's triggered something somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think I have spent so many years putting on so many layers, being so many different things, so many people. I am still finding my way through that maze.
Yeah.
And one of the things I do, and I know this is probably a bit geeky, and I can only apologise, I was a management consultant for 22 years, okay, so it's ingrained into me, is I sit and I do my root cause analysis.
Yep.
So I've forever got A3 pads everywhere, and I just write at the top the feeling that I have.
Yeah.
You know, either resistance or it's like, well, they're rubbish, they don't know what I'm talking about, or whatever it is. And I just keep saying to myself, so why does that matter?
Yeah.
Why does that matter? And keep going, because I don't always know what the answer is. And it might come down to something as simple as, it just made me feel stupid.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe they have a point. Maybe there is something that I'm uncomfortable with that I need to bring out of the dark room.
Yeah.
Or maybe their feedback really isn't valid. I've tested it against my first principles, against my truth.
Yeah.
Now I need to put it in the bin and move on.
Yeah.
And you got to make...
And move past it.
And move past it. And I think you can do that if you get to the truth, but it's not always so easy to get to that.
No, because to get to the truth, sometimes we have to dig really, really deep. And as we said earlier, we're not massively comfortable with that. It's like when people come to therapy, I'm literally sat with a big mirror in front of them going, I'm just going to stare into this for 50 minutes. Let's see how comfortable that is. As I'm asking you questions and asking you to go deeper and deeper, it's really uncomfortable. We talk about the shadow self quite a lot and how there are parts of us, we all have parts of us that we really don't like, that we really don't want to talk about, that we really don't want to admit. We just don't. You know, I've been in and out of therapy for years, and as a therapist now, still in therapy, and went back into therapy about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and again went into these places, and I looked at my therapist and went, oh my goodness, are we back here again? Am I still digging? Am I still going? And we just go deeper and deeper and deeper, and I looked at him and went, you know, I feel really done with this right now, but I knew I had to do it. And I knew I had to do it because of what I do for a job. I knew I had to do it. I was like, I cannot be the therapist that doesn't go to therapy and doesn't dig deep. I have to be almost like 5 steps ahead of everybody that I'm working with. So I have to keep doing this. But goodness, it's uncomfortable.
It is. I absolutely, absolutely get it. And I think one of the things I say to myself, I have a lot of digging still to do. there's a lot of holes that haven't even been excavated yet. I have a lot of digging. But, you know, part of it is, and I love Gabrielle Bernstein's the universe has your back book, because she talks about perspective.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just have these books around just to pick them up to remind me.
Yeah.
You know, just to kind of focus myself and, I suppose, lean on somebody else. Is whilst I'm still able to dig, whilst I'm still able to uncover stuff, do you know what? I'm still living.
Yeah.
I'm still living and I'm still discovering something new. Yeah. I mean, my biggest dig to date was actually about a financial addiction I had.
Right.
And I just, things just got horrendous because it didn't matter when I was working full time and earning whatever I was earning, you know, you can patch over the cracks.
Yeah.
When I became a stay-at-home mum, I wasn't able to patch over the cracks anymore. And my husband was incredibly, incredibly patient. And you could just see him, as he always has done, just waiting for me to get to the realization. He knew what the answer was.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to get there yourself. You know, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And one morning I just got up and I wrote a blog. And I wrote a very long blog on the fact I was a financial addict. And I just came clean. And I put everything in the blog. It's on my website. And what I would say is I'm neither proud nor ashamed.
Yeah.
It's part of my story.
Yeah.
It's part of who I am. I've used it as a distraction from things I didn't want to face. It was a distraction from a lot of uncomfortable truths.
Yeah.
When I stopped work, you know, my career had defined me. That had made me somebody.
Yeah.
Because actually, I wasn't somebody without it. So when I didn't have the career, I needed a lot of crutches.
Yeah.
I needed to be distracted from the things that I didn't want to face. And I just sat and I wrote it all down. And I just published it. And the big thing for me was I published it on LinkedIn, which is my professional network.
Yeah.
See, Facebook's so different.
So brave.
Because Facebook, you know, you've got a lot of friends and you've got a lot of support.
Yeah.
And the response was just was just really, really inspiring.
Yeah.
It was really inspiring because truth is incredibly powerful. It is more powerful than judgment, fear or shame.
Yeah.
Because if I have told the truth and I have stood up and I have owned it.
Yeah.
This is my truth. This is my story. And do you know what? I'm accountable for this.
Yeah.
I'm not a bad person, but I've done some stuff that's not so great.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do something about it.
We all have.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful thing. And financial shame is still one of the biggest taboos out there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, nobody wants to talk about debt. Nobody wants to talk about not having what the person next door has or saying, I can't afford it. And I did. I said, no, I can't meet you for lunch there because it's 50 quid and I don't have 50 quid.
Yeah.
And I remember going into a shop and there was this beautiful dress. It was in a sale. And this is effectively, you know, we talked about me being in financial rehab. We still talk about that now.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't afford it until I get paid on Friday. Could I put a deposit down to hold it for Friday? Yeah. And the shopkeeper said to me, well, we don't really do that. Do you have a credit card? And I went, no. And she was just like, well, oh. She was just like, put it on a credit card. I was like, yeah. And I walked out and I thought, what does that say about our society?
Yeah.
Because effectively you're asking me, I'm being upfront and going, so I obviously didn't have the dress.
Yeah.
But it was a real moment
where
I'm still thinking, that is our society, isn't it?
Yeah. You've
got a credit card.
But it felt like a moment that you were being really honest and I really admire that. And then she just almost like threw it back in your face and went, I'm not going to hear your honesty. Can you not just take out debt for it?
Because I want to, because I want to sell it.
Yeah.
Because I want to sell it because you know, again, and then we get into big conversations about around the basis of our society, this individual being, you know, very individual. I mean, goodness me, you know, there's nobody that's been a bigger capitalist than me in what I've done in my career. But I think the way our world is changing and we need to redefine what it means because consumerism, materialism, you know, we're killing our planet, we're killing ourselves.
Yeah.
It's not the best model. It's just the least wrong one we've found so far. And that's a massive difference in that.
And it's as far away from being authentic as what we can possibly get. Because when we enter into that world over what shoes we're wearing, what jacket we're wearing, how we look and all of that, we have entered into a world that is just not real. It's not authentic.
It's not. And it's, it, it's driven, it's fed, the fuel that drives it is ego, and the ego is insatiable.
Yeah.
It is insatiable. And, you know, I was so, just a shopaholic. There was, when's enough enough?
Yeah.
When is enough enough? When does it stop? When do you just step off that treadmill and say, no, I am stopping.
Yeah.
This is, I am killing myself. You know, I am not proud to admit that I pretty much didn't see my boys when they were babies.
Yeah.
I gave birth and I went to work. And I mean, literally, I was in the hospital doing emails, and I am not proud. You know, I struggle to think about that without crying.
Yeah.
Because I'm not proud that I did that.
But you're there now.
Yeah, I'm there now. And that's because I was driven by
things. Yeah.
And actually, the only thing that really mattered was, you know, these beautiful people I created. Yeah. So in a way, you know, I am not belittling postnatal depression at all, because it was not an experience I would choose to have.
Yeah.
At all. But in a way, it was life-saving, and it was life-changing for me.
Yeah.
Because it stopped me in my tracks. It took me out of the career. It put me back at home with my children.
Yeah.
And it really made me get a handle on priorities and just get real.
Get real, yeah.
And in a way, I guess grief, postnatal depression, the menopause, you know, they're really difficult stages, but in a lot of ways they're really liberating, because, you know, when you feel, particularly when you're in the depths of depression, you really don't give a toss about what people think.
No.
So you escape judgment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And once you've escaped it once, you go, I'd like some more of that.
Yeah, because I don't want to face it.
Yeah.
The most powerful thing about that story, the most powerful thing for me was that you found yourself. Because a lot of people will have been where you were at and still haven't found themselves, still are trapped in that consumerism, still buying, still not feeling, still not knowing what their oxygen is. So the most powerful part is that you did, you were able to step away, however it happened, and you saw it for what it was. And you used the phrase before you went on air, and it was show up and own up. And that's exactly what you did. You showed up and you owned up, and you kind of showed up, owned up, and then fessed up to everything, which was powerful. That was a powerful moment there.
Yeah, and I was... You know, I think I'm very blessed that I was given an environment within which I could do it.
Yes.
You know, I have a really, I mean, I think one of the great, you know, blessings I have is that I have a family where we are all embraced unconditionally for exactly who we are. You know, we're not judged or moulded to be something that we're not meant to be. In actual fact, it was one of my dad's great loves, was to see how quirky and individual and ourselves we all were.
Yeah.
So... You know, and my husband, actually, when I fessed up, you know, he's no fool by any stretch of the imagination. And it was wonderful, because once I'd fessed up and taken accountability from it, he then actually was very happy to step in and go, right, what do I need to do to help you to sort this out? I wasn't left dangling.
Now, which is amazing.
A lot of people don't have that.
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, I think I'm very, very grateful for that environment and those people that I have around me, because they enabled a lot of it. And that's where that whole we comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, entirely. And we talked earlier about the table and who brings what to the table. And actually that table is fed by the people closest to us as well. And you were in a situation there where you were able to. You know, I've found through my life that I've grown the most when I've had the right people around me, and particularly over the last 5 years, I've grown massively because the right person has been there to say, come on, you can do this, you're fine, it's okay, whatever happens, we've got this, we've got this together. And that's when we truly grow. And it'll be hard for some people to hear that, because some people will be in situations where they don't have the best support. I would say to them, work through it, know the truth, and eventually work through it, and eventually you'll sort it out.
And I'd agree with that. I think the most important thing is having the truth.
Yeah.
But Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And if you know the truth,
yeah,
working out your path,
yeah,
or the route that you need to take may not be quite as straightforward for others, but every single step counts.
Yeah.
Every tiny step,
yeah.
Whatever it is, even if it is just, it's a bit like getting fit. Even if it is just a 2-minute walk when you did a 0-minute yeah. walk, every single bit counts.
Absolutely.
And it all adds up.
Yeah. Baby steps, what I call them. Baby steps. Nick, really sadly, we've come to the end of our time. Can we do this again?
Absolutely. If you want to listen, want to continue to my listen time mad ramblings, you are very welcome.
I would absolutely love you to come back, because that was, it's one of those conversations that I feel that could go on and on and on. And I'm sure that it'll resonate with a lot of people. Is there anything that you want to leave the listeners with? One last piece.
I think it's probably a quote by Charles Bukowski. And this was the thing that actually enabled me to write the financial addiction blog, which was the turning point for my show up and owning up.
Yeah.
And Charles Bukowski, for those people who don't know, he was a poet and a writer. He was also an alcoholic and a womanizer, and he wasn't terribly well behaved at times.
Yeah.
But actually, they say that the real genius, the thing that made him a genius, was how he was completely unfettered by judgment. He was completely and utterly honest about himself, to himself, and yeah. to others. And that doesn't mean I'm condoning anybody treating people badly or doing bad things. I'm just saying that there is something about owning our own truth
yeah.
and our own story, and then choosing how you want to use that
yeah.
to move forward. And, you know, not to be scared of what others may or may not think, because really, at the end of the day, the reckoning's with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Be brave enough to step into that arena, as Brené Brown often quotes.
Yes.
Nick, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having
me.
We
will do this again.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Remember, if this podcast resonates and you think it might resonate with a friend, then please pass it on. Remember, we do these podcasts to help build a bridge between what mental health used to be and what we would like it to be, more accessible. We want more peace in the world, more peace, more happiness. If we are not talking about things you want to hear about, then please let us know. If you have any questions, please write in, and we will do our best to answer them. As always, please be very, very kind to yourself. Take care. Bye-bye.